Hey guys, my name's Abe. I'm a recovered alcoholic and addict. You know, I get a little emotional when I get out here to Austin Recovery because this place saved my life. You know, I was reluctant to get any help because I didn't think I was as bad as I'd been before in the past. Because it'd been bad before. Alcohol and drugs have driven me homeless before, traveling before. When you're in your 20s, it's traveling. When you're in your 30s, it's homeless. Yeah, I don't know if you guys know the difference, but that's the difference. When you're in your 40s, it's chronic homeless, you know. But, you know, externally, things were going okay. I just bought a house, had a brand new truck, but inside, I was empty. And I didn't see it coming in. I didn't see I was as bad as everyone else did. But one of the guys that I was partying with actually intervened on me because he had been sober before, and he knew there was a solution, and I didn't. And, you know, I said, I'll go to detox, but I'm not doing the rehab thing or whatever, you know, and, he was like, I don't care what you do. You just need to get some help. And I went into detox and I saw everybody leaving out the back door, you know, I knew if I left, I wasn't coming back. So I stayed. About day five of detox, I knew they were about to discharge me, and I knew if they let me out that I didn't have a shot at staying sober. And so I said, look, you know, I hear all the guys at detox, they're like, oh, I'm going to the ranch. I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty good. You know, I saw the flyer, and it was like horses and a pool, and I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. I want to go to the ranch, you know. And they're like, yeah, it's going to be, you know, however much it was going to be, you know, whatever your price point is. I was like, man, I don't have anything. You know, I was busted. And she was like, well, we have a state funding program, and there's a guy that's supposed to show up today. If he doesn't show up at 3 o'clock, the bed's yours. And I was religious when I was a kid. I was brought up, you know, confirmed Catholic, all that stuff, but I had left that behind years ago. You know, it was probably my sixth hit of acid, and I was just like, yeah, there's way more than that, you know? There's no, your God's so small compared to the universe, you know, it's like. So I said this prayer, you know, and I'd done this before. I remember laying in between those hotel beds, like my heart's about to explode. You know, I'm on the verge of overdose. I'm sweating, my arm's numb. And I remember, and still hitting it, you know, still hitting that pipe. And I remember saying the prayer that you guys open with, the Serenity Prayer. And I don't even know where I learned that prayer. But that prayer wasn't enough to get me to stop hitting that pipe. You know, I'm sitting there and just my heart's about to explode and I can't stop hitting it, and that prayer's not enough. And I remember saying this prayer right when she told me that. I was like, God, please let this guy go do dope for one more day, you know, so I could get into treatment. And sure enough, 3 o'clock rolled around, he didn't call, and I got that spot in treatment. And immediately, here's how fast ego returns. Once she said, we got a spot, you can come in. I was like, great, let me run back to my house. Let me go to the office. Let me check my emails. Let me make some calls, and I'll meet you over there tomorrow. And she was like, no, get your plastic bag. You're getting in the druggy buggy and going to treatment. They still call it the druggy buggy, or Ativan, or whatever. Yeah. User cruiser. We got out here to the ranch, and I got into the treatment, and we used to be in the big building here where the women are now, and it was like a warehouse of drug addicts, you know. It's like, where's the ranch? Where's the horses? Where's the swimming pool? You know, and I'm in sales, so I'm like, all right, good job, you got me. You know, it's like, I can appreciate a good pitch, and you close the deal, and I'm here, you know. It's like a dormitory-style situation. There's like four guys in a room. It's like, shit, I've done this before. You know, I know how to do this. So play dominoes, hang out with the Mexicans. I'll see you in 30 days. You know, it's like, I know how to do this part. And so I'm trying to figure out what the currency is. You know, so I'm like, what do I need to get smokes? What do I need to get coffee? What, you know, so I can not have to do chores, and so I can put myself just a little ahead of everybody else. I can separate myself from everybody. I need to find out what the currency is. And I was like, so what's the hustle here? You know, what's the deal? You smokes, coffee, what's... And he was like, no, it's not like that. We're just trying to get some help. We're just trying to stay sober. So there wasn't even a hustle. And sorry, I got pretty bad ADD, so when people are like moving around, I'm just like, I'm about to start over and end, and everyone just stay still. You know, that's perfect. He's fired. Yeah. You know, anyway, I got to treatment. I hate when people spend an hour talking about how they got to treatment. I did a lot of drugs. I drank a lot. Things were really good, really bad. It doesn't matter what brought you here. What matters is that we're here. I thought what brought me here separated me from the guy next to me. You know, if that guy went through what I went through, he'd use and drink the way I do. You know, if you guys really knew the way I felt about myself, you'd drink and use the way I did too. And winds up there's something that bonds us all here. And that's that spiritual malady, that thing that makes us all separate from other people. That thing that tells me I'm either a piece of shit or I'm way cooler than you. You know, and the only thing that's ever made me feel part of, you know, is alcohol and drugs. I remember telling my friends, you know, we're going to a concert. I'm like, let me get right and I'll meet y'all there. Did you guys have to get right before you? You know, and I remember the solution. It was like six drinks, two rails, a joint. Boom. I'm part of. I'm connected. I finally feel like I think everybody else feels. And I was telling my girlfriend that, you know, about six drinks and two rails. And that's like, that made no sense to her. She's like, what? But to me, that was just getting started. Like, let's get started and then we'll get going. Like, that's... But the thing is, I that stopped working. You know, six drinks, two rails, I feel part of, I feel connected. I can't hit that point anymore. Maybe that worked one night, maybe it worked for years. I don't remember. But the thing is, I fly by that point at Mach 1 now, you know? It's like, I just want to feel part of, and then all of a sudden it's 3 days later, you know, and everyone's gone home, and people are having kids, and like... starting careers, and I'm still at the dope house, you know? I'm still living with friends, and, you know, it's the party never ended. But the thing is, it did. It ended years ago, and I just never stopped. You know, I was trying not to feel too much when I came out here because today is, I lost my dad about 8 years ago, seven years ago, and his birthday's tonight, October 22nd, and so I remember when I was going into detox, I was like, well, I'll go after my dad's birthday. Let me get through Dad's birthday. And the guy that intervened on me was like, what better gift can you give him than changing your life? And you know, the book talks about selfishness and self-centeredness being the root of my problems. It's the root because I don't see it. All I see is the problems. You know, I don't make enough. If she would just give me one more chance, you know. You know, all I see is the problems. I don't see the root. That I want everything my way. That I've been living my whole life based on fear. You know, and you couldn't explain to me that I was afraid of anything when I walked in here. Because I walk into any situation. I actually run when you're supposed to walk away. I run two situations. And so telling me that I live a life based on fear made no sense to me until it was broken down here. And here's the deal. I don't remember anything, any of the lessons, any of the sleep therapy where they play the music and you draw pictures. You know, I don't remember any of that having an effect on me when I was out here. But what I remember is, here's why I'm so grateful to the 12 Steps and to the 12 Step Fellowship. Is I didn't go out looking for them. They came in here and found me. And guys came out from other fellowships with 20 plus years and big trucks and big watches. And I didn't hear a word they said. But this guy came out from Cocaine Anonymous. He had 6 months of sobriety. He lived in a sober house with 8 other guys. He worked in a kitchen for $9 an hour. And I wanted what that guy had. That guy had freedom. I believe that guy did dope the way I did. And I believed he didn't ever have to do it again. So I said, I'm going to try this thing one time, and if it works, cool, and if not, you know, forget about it. You know, I already know how to live the other life fairly well. So I was gonna do this, and guys came out that had double-digit sobriety and lost it. You know, I had 12 years, I had 15 years, and then I stopped praying, I stopped meditating, I stopped helping other people. I'm like, that's all I have to do to not smoke crack and miss Christmas? Stop wrecking trucks? Is pray, meditate, and help other people? And I'm not willing to do that. You know, I'm not willing to do a few things every day to not ever have to ruin my life again. And that's how selfish I am. You know, so I said, I'm going to give this thing a shot, and I'm going to do it mechanically. I'm going to give my life to this thing that I don't believe in. You want me to say God? Fine, God. You know, I'll say it because I've got nothing. You know, I came in here beat, just empty. Yeah, I had things, but in here I had nothing. You know, I was empty. I couldn't sustain love. I couldn't, even if you love me, I couldn't reciprocate the love because I play a stage character. And even if you love that stage character, you love that stage character. You would never love me if you actually knew what I felt about myself. So I couldn't reciprocate love. I'm going to try this thing. You want me to say God? Fine, God. You want me to write inventory? Fine, I wrote inventory. You want me to show up early, set up chairs, make coffee, join committees? Fine. You know, and I immersed myself in this thing. And people are like, oh my God, you're still sober. And I'm, you know, and they're like, how'd you do it? I'm like, I did what they told me to do. You know, how many people have been through treatment or 12 steps before and failed? You know, it's not because treatment or the 12 steps failed. It's because I didn't do something. So I was going to try this thing mechanically just to kind of see if it worked. But I also was going to prove that it didn't work. You know, it doesn't work on a guy like me. It works on all the people that already came in believing in this thing. You know, believing, you know, all the, like, sheep, like, all the, God, you know, those people that just came in with belief. You know, because the guy carrying the Bible and the 12 and 12 and the big book around and was quoting and just spitting fire at meetings, that guy went out. I almost got kicked out of here week two. I got in a fight. You know, I was least likely to succeed in treatment. Like, everyone had this great desperation story. Oh, I need help. I need help. I got intervened on. I didn't want to be here. You know, and they're like, it's guys like you that aren't going to make it. And, you know, and there's no rhyme or reason to who stays sober and who doesn't. You know, the biggest knucklehead in here that doesn't follow anybody's instruction winds up staying sober for years. And the most compliant, big book quoting, circle community leader is going to get high. You know, it just doesn't make sense. I remember a friend of mine got his second DWI and he started going to meetings. And my buddy Tom, and I was like, hey man, can I go to meetings with you? And he was like, well, I think you got to get busted first. And I was like, oh, no, fuck that, you know. I didn't know you could just walk into recovery. I didn't know you could just walk into meetings. I thought you had to be court ordered to go into meetings. You know, the people I grew up with and the people I ran around with, we didn't get help. You know, we didn't seek recovery. You know, that doesn't... Who quits? You know, that's... You quit if you're, like, on paper, and even then you, like, bring fake pee. And, you know, it's... Yeah, You know, I didn't have anything planned tonight to say. I got sober October 20th of 2004, and 2 days ago that was 13 years, and that's still. My friend says that nobody's more surprised about that than me, and that's my truth too. No one's more surprised about that than me. It still blows me away that I've stayed sober this long, because I don't stick with anything. Everything I've done, I've always left. Her, the career, school, that job industry, I've always left. This is the only thing that I've ever felt, that I've ever done, that I've sustained. It's my recovery and this connection with this power that I found. You know, I like the part of the big book where it talks about what used to be a flimsy reed is now the guiding light of my life. And what started off as like a spiritual concept. They're like, make your own conception of God. And, you know, and mine was going to be a lot smarter and cooler than yours. You know, mine's going to be like Native American with some Buddhist, you know, and just like mixtape God, like way cooler than yours, you know. Yours is like this, mine's like this, you know. So what started off is like this concept. I started getting experiences, spiritual experience. Like I'd hang around the meetings and, you know, people would be like, oh, you know, I was going to be indicted on 3 counts and that went away and that's God. Like, I didn't know how I was going to pay rent and then this check came and that's God. I hung around long enough to where that check didn't come. And to me, that's God. You know, things started falling apart. And that's God. I lost my best friend. I lost my dog. I lost my dad. I lost a house. I lost companies. I lost prestige. And that's God. And I didn't use. Yeah. That's how I feel. You know, I'm so grateful to Austin Recovery and and the 12 steps. You know, I was driving out here, and I was a little behind schedule, and I get anxiety if I'm like, I got to be 30 minutes early, you know, because that's the way I was raised in this thing. You know, we show up 30 minutes early. We go talk to the weird guy in the corner. That's why I talk to Bill. You know, that's what we do. You know, we find the guy that's on his way out, and we reach for his hand. And somebody did that for me. I showed up to my first meeting. There's an old guy named Charles, and he came up, and he's the only one that came up and shook my hand at the meeting. And it had a profound effect on me. You know, because I was about to leave and say, you know what, this place is clicky, you know, FAA, you know, I'm out of here, you know. And that guy reeled me in just by shaking my hand. That's how profound an effect one person can have on another person. Just reaching out and getting connection. You know, making connection with one person. I had this counselor out here. Her name was Gail. And she was so cool, man. She's this little southern older lady. And we were doing the little county-funded intake, like when I got here. And, you know, the lights were real somber in her office, and it smelled like lavender, and it's all, like, laid back and old lady style, you know, just, it's all zen, like, American flute playing in there, like, and she's doing her little intake, and I'd never really got help. You know, I went to treatment, you know, when I was, like, 12 or 13, like, I hit my first treatment center, but I just got a piece of paper so I could get back on the football team and get people's parents to let me back in their house. And, but, you know, I'd seen this on TV, like people in therapy, like, you know, saying everything that they did. And so I thought that's what this part was. So I go in there and I'm just like, oh, I did this. And, you know, they didn't love me like they loved him. And, you know, just all this stuff that I did, like all this horrible, just unloving stuff that I've done in my life, just started everything. I just told her everything. And she was like, what's your social again? You know, it's like, I didn't know how this thing works. She's doing a county-funded intake, and I'm thinking it's therapy. And she was like, how'd that feel? And I was like, yeah, good. You know, she's like, good's not a feeling. I'm like, well, I'm tired. You know, I don't know. You know, I grew up in a Hispanic, alpha male, loving household, but we don't talk about our feelings. You know, I'm feeling this. It doesn't matter. You know, get in there and play. You know, it's like, you know, my dad was a colonel and just a good man, you know, but it doesn't matter what we feel, we go do, you know. It doesn't matter what you feel, get back on the field, you know. It doesn't matter what you feel, get back in class, you know. It's, so I don't know how to talk about my feelings. So they put this stupid sign on me that said, ask me how I feel. And it had all these like emoticons on it, like confused, perplexed, you know, angry, you know. And so it was, the guys would mess with me. Like, how'd you feel? And I'd be like, fucking angry. You walk away, you know. You know, I didn't want to. It's funny because, you know, when I was saying that prayer for them to let me in this place, I really wanted, I knew I didn't want to smoke crack anymore, but I didn't want the whole sobriety package. Like, I was like, do you guys have a crack-only program? Because I'm really interested in that. But they hadn't written that curriculum yet. I think they're working on it, maybe? No? So I didn't know I had to get all the way sober. But apparently that's all you guys got to offer. So I'll try it, I guess. You know, in treatment, I met one of my lifelong friends. He's one of my best friends today. We're the only guys in treatment that had cigarettes, so we bonded. You know, like, he actually had, like, stuff, and I had stuff, so we were like, we found the currency, you know, cigarettes. So I didn't have to sweep one floor, I didn't have to mop, like, I found the currency. I knew it was there, I just had to find it. Because I'm all about the hustle, you know, show me the hustle so I can not have to work as hard as everybody else, you know, and just... But apparently there's not one for the spiritual part of this program. There's not a hustle to get through doing the spiritual work. Now, I saw a lot of people that tried. And one of the things my first sponsor told me is, you know, if you want to hang around recovery, get yourself a black jacket. Because you're going to bury a lot of people. And that's been my experience in 13 years sober. So we've lost some good people. We lost a lot of people this year. You know, and but you're also going to go to a lot of weddings and graduations. So get yourself a black jacket. And that's always my advice. Get yourself a black jacket. Get yourself a nice dress, whatever your deal is. You know, my family's here. This is my mom and my sister and my girlfriend, a bunch of my friends, and so I like to tell the old story of what brought me in, but I will spare them the gross details of, you know, what happened out there, because we all know what happens out there. And when there's kids and ladies and parents, and I don't do that. And that's something I've learned in recovery. You know, because I want to explain to you guys how cool I was and how tough I was and how much stuff I carried and, you know, all that bullshit, ego bullshit. But it doesn't matter what brought us here. What matters is that we're here. I'm here to change. I remember walking in and being like, this is my opportunity. This is my shot to become the guy I've always wanted to become. You know, because I was raised by a man of honor, you know, someone who said he was going to be somewhere, he showed up. Someone who helped people at a drop of a hat. If somebody asked for something, get in the truck, we're going to go do it right now. You know, my dad moved me out of more apartments than I ever moved out of myself. You know, they went and cleaned up more of my messes. And I always wanted to be a guy like that. I've always wanted to be a guy who actually did what he said he was going to do. And I've tried. I've tried to be that guy. I've tried to pull that off. I've tried to get home on Friday and give her the paycheck and, like, not mess it up. And I can't pull it off. I can't sustainably be the guy that comes home and gives her the paycheck. You know, and doesn't step out on her. I don't know how to be that guy. I've tried to be that guy. I wanted to be that guy. You know, I wanted to be that guy for a long time, but I can't pull that off. It's not because I'm a bad person. It's because the alcohol and the drugs were making that decision. That fear was making that decision. My fear-based life was making that decision. If I give her everything, I won't be comfortable. I won't be okay. I won't be in control. And I'm uncomfortable when I'm not in control. You know, and I see guys like my brother-in-law, you know, that come home every night and they, you know, they're just okay not having the power in the relationship. And it's like, I don't understand that. Like, how do guys, like, sit there and take no for an answer to their significant others? Like, I don't understand how people do that. Like, how do you come home and hear no and not get what you want? You know, that doesn't make sense to me. Something happened in the process of getting healthy and sober. You know, something happened when I started working the steps, when I gave my life to this God that I said I didn't believe in, that all of a sudden I started having experiences with this power. I started staying sober through things that were on my, if this happens, I'm going to get loaded list. Like, if my dad dies, I'm going to get loaded. You know, if this if I lose that, I'm going to get loaded. You know, if any of that happens, I'll get, you know. I had this list of reservations that if this happens, I deserve, you know, some whiskey if this happens. You know, all of a sudden, I'm getting experience with this power. You know, it's not this conception anymore. It's an experience. And what happened after experience with the power is all of a sudden I have reliance. I know that if I show up, if I inventory my day every night, if I show up and help the guy that's suffering, if I show up and grab that guy in the corner that's still suffering, if I show up to the meetings and give more than I take, I'm going to be taken care of. That's my experience. That's not lip service. That's something I've experienced. And all of a sudden, I have reliance on this power. You want me to say, God, find God, because I got nothing. You know, and I'll say God all day long. But what happens is I believe this stuff now. You know, if I'm sitting here like trying to debate what I think God is with another drug addict in treatment, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I don't remember running into Aristotle in treatment. Like, you're not sitting next to a valedictorian here, you know. We're all in the same place here for a reason. You know, because I've got this thing that separates me from everybody. I've got this spiritual sickness that's inside of me that I don't feel part of. And all of a sudden, I started working my steps and helping other people. And I've dedicated my life to helping other people. Chris has dedicated his life to helping other people. That's what we do. What happens as a result of this is we get happy. You know, and I thought, you couldn't have told me 5 years ago that I wouldn't have been happier than I was then. But what happened is 5 years, you know, I dropped the pipe, I put down the bottle, and I picked up, you know, food, money. You know, I blew up. I blew up 50 pounds in treatment, in 30 days of treatment. You know, I started taking honey and jelly back to my room because they wouldn't give you jelly at night. So, they just give you peanut butter. So I started hoarding jelly in the day and making peanut butter and jellies at night. I don't know if they still hide the jelly from you guys, but don't do that. So I came in 300 pounds into treatment. And by 6 years sober, I was 500 pounds. That big. There's a picture of me in the cafeteria. And I got another chance to change my life. 3 years ago. 9 years sober, 500 pounds. Just talking about being happy, joyous, and free, and I was stuck. What happened is I got another shot at life. You know, I had one of my best friends take over my company, and she allowed me the opportunity to get healthy. Thank you, Jane. Had my mom loan me the money to get the surgery so I could get back in the gym. Now I'm in the gym 6 days a week. So gratitude, you know, gratitude's an action. These people talk about, you know, I'm grateful for my family, I'm grateful for my sobriety, I'm grateful for my health. What are you doing? What does your gratitude look like? Gratitude's an action. I'm grateful for my body. What am I putting in it? I'm grateful for my recovery. What am I doing for it? I'm grateful for my relationship. How am I showing up? You know, I'm grateful. Gratitude's not a feeling. Gratitude's an action. You know, I'm grateful for my sponsees, so I show up for them. I call them. I'm grateful for my sponsor. I call him. You know, I'm living a life today beyond my wildest dreams. And it's been one of the worst years. I lost my dog. I had a fire at one of the houses. I mean, stuff. I've got this tax. You don't even want to see my tax bill. Jesus Christ. But what's happened is that stuff. You know, I've walked through so much fear around that stuff. And I told the guys in my accountability group, it's like, I'm still going to take the actions of a guy who believes in this power. This thing's messing with me, telling me, you know, it's never going to be okay. I'm never going to be comfortable again. But I'm taking the actions. I'm still showing up early. I'm still making coffee. I'm still getting there early and wiping down the tables. I'm still showing up and calling my sponsors and calling my sponsees. I'm not freaking out in my mind about, you know, how everything's just horrible. I can't believe life happens to me. Here's the deal. Once I've put all this down on paper and stopped being a victim of life, I'm accountable for this stuff, you know? And here's the best part of that fourth step. I don't know if you guys start writing your inventory, but I'm not a victim of what's happened to me. Stuff has happened. I've put myself in some bad situations. But guess what? The thief stole from me. Did I know he was a thief? Yeah, I did. You know what? The girl cheated on me. Of course she cheated on me. She had low self-esteem. You know, that's what they do. You know, why else would she date me, you know, when I'm still a drug addict, you know? So, I'm not the victim anymore. I put myself in this situation, and sometimes we are victims. Sometimes stuff happens to us, and we're victims. But what's my part in that? Is I held on to that resentment. Here's the deal. I want you prosecuted to the full extent of the law, but I want forgiveness for me. So if I want forgiveness, I have to be willing to give it and feel compassion. You know, I was just talking to somebody today that's suffering. You know, his wife won't let him see the kids, and he's just angry. And you know what? I felt compassion for him. I'm like, God, that must suck to have that much hate in your heart. He was like, I hope the worst for her. I hope, you know, this happens and they're taken from her and all this stuff. And I'm just like, how do you live with that hate? You know, it breaks my heart, you know, because I love this guy. But here's the deal with forgiveness. Once I've forgiven, I'm free. You know, the other person is not suffering because I hate them. I'm the only one that suffers. So I found freedom in forgiveness. That's where I get happy. You know, a concept that was given to me is exponential happiness, which means you couldn't have told me 3 years ago that I wasn't happy, joyous, and free at 500 pounds, but what happened is I've got a happiness that I worked on from the inside. You know, one of my favorite lines in the book is, once the spiritual malady is overcome, then I'll straighten out mentally and physically. So I work on my spirit, and then everything else happens. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. One of my favorite readings is on page 124 of the Big Book. And it says, Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is the thing of supreme value in life. That's true if one is willing to turn the past into good account. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. The alcoholic's past thus becomes the principal asset of the family. Frequently, it's the only one. Your painful past might be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problems. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member should be too willing to bring out former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Here's the good part. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. So my dark past is the greatest asset I have. Your dark past is the greatest asset you have. I don't know about you guys, but I'm rich in dark past. Like, what makes me... My dark past is the greatest possession I have, it says, in God's hands. In my hands, my dark past is guilt and shame. I can't believe I did this. I can't believe I did it again. You know, they all trusted me and I've messed it up one more time. You know, in my hands, dark past is just guilt and shame. I don't even know how I got through this talk with all that going on. Seriously, man. Yeah. Anyway, man, I'm so grateful for Awesome Recovery. You know, this place did miracles. I've seen this place turn just low bottom credence to like some of my best friends who are just some of my favorite people in the world. And I've got a whole group of guys who just are miracles. And you guys are miracles, man. I've seen this thing work 100% of the time for the guys that do 100% of the work. Anyway, I got nothing else.